The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio, the off-season edition. This is episode number 187 of the world's greatest Reds podcast, especially if you've never listened to another one. Joining me again is my good friend and yours from RedsMinorLeagues.com, by far the best Cincinnati Reds-related site on the internet. That's Doug Gray. How are you today, Doug?
I'm pretty good. I'm feeling a lot better after that introduction, too, though.
All right, I know.
So, how are you doing, Chad?
Doing well. Are we missing the Reds? You know, I started to say I'm missing the Reds, and I do miss watching them every night. But it's also good to have a little bit of a break, and we're getting some pretty good baseball with some of these other teams that are, for some reason, are still playing.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what's going on and why the Reds aren't playing and these other teams are. Like you, I'm definitely missing the Reds, but I am enjoying the baseball. So, I mean, it would be better if the Reds were playing and I were enjoying Reds baseball, but there's been pretty good playoff baseball going on so far.
Yeah, hopefully soon we'll have those Reds again, but in the playoffs. But, yeah, it's been a lot of drama, some comebacks, some surprises. You know, a lot of our listeners are not, and here I'm presuming that we actually have listeners, but a lot of our listeners are not big Indians fans. You know, that's the Ohio thing, I guess. But, man, it was so brutal watching the Indians. And I didn't prepare that we were going to talk about this, but I just want to mention quickly. Watching the Indians win the first two and then come home in that division series and blow it. Boy, does that remind you of anything?
I have no idea what you're talking about or referencing. No, I do not.
I appreciate your ability to...
You don't have to explain what it is either. I think that everybody has the internet, and if they want to look that up on their own, they can.
Yes, let's not talk about it, because you talk about a just brutal gut punch. Oh, man, I've still got my 2012 Reds World Series tickets.
Chad, why'd you have to go there?
Sorry, I can't stop. Okay, let's get back to talking about the current Reds, because even though they're not in the playoffs, still always interesting to talk about. So I guess Dick Williams, the intrepid general manager of our Cincinnati Reds, I think I can call him our Cincinnati Reds, had a pretty interesting interview this week with the guys over there at the Inquirer, Trent Rosecrans, Zach Buchanan, our friends and neighbors. And did you see that? What'd you think about it?
I did. And for those of you who didn't, you really should check it out. There was a lot of really interesting things that he said. Now, the thing that stuck out to me the most is he kind of addressed... as the minor league guy, it obviously kind of registered with me a little bit more. But
you are the minor league guy.
Yeah.
I
try to be.
A minor league guy. You're the minor league guy.
I mean, there are a few other guys, but they're all working for the Reds. So,
exactly.
Which, by the way, guys, if you're listening, I am willing to work for you.
yeah.
But basically, they asked Dick Williams, what do you kind of foresee for Nick Senzel in the future? And this kind of came off of a question where they addressed Eugenio Suarez and his future with the Reds. And Dick Williams basically said that he sees Suarez as the third baseman, which obviously leads to, well, what are you going to do with Nick Senzel, right, number two overall pick 2 years ago? Dick kind of basically said, I'll bring it up and I'll read the exact thing that he said. He said, I think it's fair to say with Nick that we need to keep our options open with him because we think eventually we want that bat in the lineup. So we need to find out exactly what our options are with him. I think it's most likely second or third. He can also play short, but I wouldn't characterize that as his primary position. I'm sure he could also play the corners if needed, if we wanted to go there as well. I'm assuming he's meaning corner outfield spots.
Right, yeah.
We don't want to bounce him around too much. I'm a believer that players of his caliber, they can play one spot, they're going to continue to develop, and they're going to get comfortable and they're going to hit. Nick doesn't seem like the guy that needs 3 months in left field to be able to go out there. So,
fascinating.
Yeah, there's a lot of different options that he kind of threw out there for basically the guy that I feel that everybody believes is the Reds' top prospect. And if there are a few people out there that think it's Hunter Green, and I can understand your point with that if you do believe that, you know.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you, but
he's years away, whereas everybody believes Senzel is going to be here next year at some point. Whether you're a person that believes that's going to be at the end of April or somewhere near, you know, the end of the season next year, everybody's expecting Senzel to be up here, and the general manager basically just said, "Well, we're not entirely sure where he's going to play, but it's probably not going to be where he's played his entire professional career."
It's fascinating to me because it brings to well, there's a lot to unpack here. The first thing is it brings forward some possibilities that really I hadn't considered. I hadn't thought of him being a corner outfielder, but there's no question he could do it athletically. So, you know, it opens up more options. I've been in favor of moving Suarez for a while. Moving back to shortstop, if you have to. I think he could handle it. I don't think he's going to be a Gold Glover. Or move him over to second. He can definitely handle second. But the more I watched him this year, I've sort of gradually come around to the idea that, man, we've got such a good thing in Eugenio Suarez at third base. You know, Gold Glove, he won't win the Gold Glove, but Gold Glove level defense along with that bat. And so, you know, are you going to mess with that? So, I mean, I can see wanting to leave Suarez there, and I can't argue with it at this point. I couldn't argue with moving him either. But I like the idea that Dick Williams has now sort of officially addressed what's kind of been the elephant in the room for a few months among all of us that talk about the Reds too often, which is, you know, what do we do with Senzel? And it seems to me like second base looks an awful lot like it's the eventual destination. It seems natural. What do you think? Because he played a lot of second base for University of Tennessee in college.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. You know, that's kind of where he played for the first 2 years at Tennessee, and then they moved him over to third base where, to be fair, he looked more comfortable. He transitioned to that position well. But, you know, scouts, even leading into the draft, there were some out there that said, you know, if we were to draft him, we'd play him at second base because, you know, it's a more valuable position. If a guy can actually play there, it's going to bring that player and the team more value if he can also play third base. You just expect a third baseman to hit more. That's all.
I was just quickly coming into his professional career. I was of the mind that this is a guy that is going to be able to play either one of those because I found a quote. I was writing a piece about him for Cincinnati Magazine about Senzel right after the draft, and I found a quote from his college coach at University of Tennessee. It was not Butch Jones, who's going to be fired any day now as the football coach. We'll talk about college football in a minute, Doug.
I'm down.
University of Virginia, 5-1. Hop on the bandwagon now. But he said if it were up to him, he would start him out in pro ball as a shortstop. He said he thinks he can handle it athletically. Now, the Reds didn't, and I don't fault the Reds for not starting him as a shortstop. But just the idea that, that his college coach thought he could handle that athletically means to me that third base, shortstop, wherever you decide, he's going to be fine.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have played him at shortstop either.
He did play some shortstop in college, not much, but some.
He did, and I'll be honest, I've said it before, so this isn't me, you know, coming out and saying it now. I believed even before the draft that was just kind of a thing for his coach to try and give him a little bit more buzz in the draft as a possible, you know, top overall draft pick than anything else. I mean, you can get away with a lot more in college than you can in professional baseball. But, you know,
just the fact that he had played some there. It wasn't like his coach was just saying it for the draft. I agree with you on that. But, you know, at least he put his money where his mouth was.
Absolutely. And I don't get me wrong. I think Nick Senzel is an outstanding athlete. I've seen him play a lot in person and almost every day on video. And, I mean, he's fully capable in my mind of playing second base. And, you know, and as you said, I if it were up to me, I'd have slide Suarez over there before I'd slide Senzel over there. But it's not up to me. And, I mean, either way, as long as both of the guys are in the lineup, I don't have a problem with it.
What do you think
I think they're both going to hit, and I think either one can handle second and third. So
yeah, I don't think you can go wrong either way there, however you decide to do it. You know, it's six of one, half dozen of the other. But what about the idea of moving Suarez to shortstop? What do you think about that?
I'm not going to lie. I'd at least give it a look in
spring
training.
But see.
I will say this. We don't know that the Reds didn't try it, you know, this past season before games just to see how it worked, and it didn't. Because if you remember, when Cozart went down, Brian Price did mention the idea of possibly getting Suarez some playing time there, and he did. I think there were a couple innings here or there that he did get in the games, but you know, I'd have to guess that they probably did take a look at it, and it didn't seem like it was going to work. Now maybe I'm just totally reading into the situation here, But that's the feeling that I get, that they wouldn't have gone out and said that, and they not at least tried it. And you know, Suarez is definitely a bigger guy now than he was 2 years ago when he was playing shortstop. So it wouldn't surprise me if he just doesn't quite have the range at this point for shortstop. With the information I've got right now, I would definitely go into spring training with the idea of at least trying it early on and seeing what happened.
Once I heard those quotes from Brian Price that they were going to, you know, give him a shot maybe here and there if they can find some spots to try him there, it made me think, well, you know, the door's not closed to that. And what do I know if Suarez can play short? I mean, he played short before, made a lot of errors, but, you know, Barry Larkin made 40 errors when he was 22 years old or something too. So, and I'm not saying Suarez is going to be a shortstop or going to be Barry Larkin. But when Suarez did not play that much, that didn't actually come to pass. You know, I still don't really have the eye test, nothing to judge on other than what he did a couple of years ago at shortstop. I see that bat, and I think if he could play even an average shortstop defensively, the bat's so good that it helps the lineup. That's the way I look at it. You stick that guy in a shortstop, it makes everything look a lot better. So I would love to see them try it. I don't expect to see it, but I don't know. Maybe I'm tilting at another windmill here, like Aroldis Chapman in the starting rotation, but I'd like to see it.
Well, I actually had this conversation with someone earlier, so if you happen to read this earlier and you're now hearing it, I'm sorry. at least in the Aroldis Chapman situation, they weren't both saying and doing the same thing. They were using Chapman as a reliever for a while, but still saying we want him to start. It's just that's going to happen in the future. Right now, Dick Williams is basically saying, you know, Suarez isn't a shortstop except for maybe in a pinch, and he is the third baseman. So I'm definitely not expecting it. If everything goes perfectly, then this is going to happen. Mind, yeah, it'd be great, but I just don't see any reason to have any realistic expectations that it's going to happen.
Don't bet the ranch on Suarez being your shortstop next year. So let's say that second base and third base are where where Senzel and Suarez are in some form or fashion. One's a second baseman, one's the third baseman. Peraza's your shortstop, I guess?
That was the implication.
Jose Peraza?
Now, here's where this whole thing gets interesting. Is, you know, he Dick Williams definitely mentioned that if they don't re-sign Zach Cozart or make the qualifying, he said bring back, but, you know, they're either going to have to re-sign him or offer him the qualifying offer to bring Zach Cozart back, that Peraza would be the internal option they'd look at if they were going to stick with someone internal. Now, Mark Sheldon actually wrote an article about Jose Peraza heading down to Venezuela, where he's from, to play in winter ball. Now, the quotes from Peraza were from the end of September, so you know, the season was still going on. It was, you know, 3 weeks ago. It wasn't that long ago. But Peraza had mentioned he was going to go down there and play shortstop every day. Well, he's played two games so far, and he started both of them at second base.
That says something.
So,
or does it?
And that's the thing. We don't really know at this point if it does or if it doesn't. You know, a lot of guys play out of position in these winter leagues in preference to other players. Of course, the other player that he's playing out of position for, assuming that he's actually playing out of position, is a 23-year-old kid who has never made it out of Double-A with a career OPS under 600 in the minor leagues. Now, obviously, you don't play a guy at shortstop because of his bat, despite what we just said about Eugenio Suarez.
right.
But I do find it interesting that the guy with the major league experience is not the one getting time at shortstop versus the guy who's the same age who hasn't made it out of Double-A.
Boy, it really is. Again, we're trying to read minds and read something into two games there. And I don't know why he wouldn't be playing shortstop. You know, just from on the surface. It seems to me like he is the – I mean, he may be the second baseman to start the season. Maybe. Actually, he won't be the second baseman to start the season. He's got to be the shortstop unless they bring Cozart back. He's got to be the shortstop because you've got a second baseman.
The only other option internally right now would be Zach Vinci, who they called him up in September, and he got, what, 7 at-bats?
Yeah.
I mean, clearly he's not an option unless literally the only option. Like if three guys get injured or something, then Zach Vinci's going to be your option.
And you watch Vinci more than me. He can pick it. Defensively, he can handle the position, I think, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's any issue whatsoever with Zach Vinci playing shortstop defensively. I'm just I'm not sure he's going to hit.
Right.
Granted, I feel that same way about Jose Peraza at times too. So, but I think it's very clear that Jose Peraza is the guy that is going to get the job if they don't go anywhere else. I mean, if Zach Cozart doesn't come back, he's the guy. He's literally the only guy that it seems there's any sort of evidence saying this is who we're going to go with.
No, I think so. And I actually have a little bit of hope that he's going to hit. You know, he's 23. The second half of the season, you know, they had this sort of much ballyhooed change in his approach to the plate. And it did result in some results, you know, in terms of his plate approach. And he showed some progress as a kid. And he's got this reputation now of, you know, wanting to work and get better. And I think I think his defense is going to get better and better and better too. I mean, I think he's got the tools physically to handle the position. That's not to say that he will become an above average defensive shortstop, but I think he's got the tools to do that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't think he's ever going to be confused with Zach Cozart over there, who, you know, was one of the better defensive shortstops in baseball. But yeah, you know, I think he could hold his own. He's not going to be a detriment to your defensive side of things if he gets the most out of his defensive tools.
Well, if we're going to compare future shortstops to Zach Cozart defensively, we're going to be pretty disappointed most of the time. And the Reds have had a pretty good run of shortstops. Cozart had a good career, as it turns out. And, you know, over the last 40 years, what have we had? You know, Larkin and Concepcion and you know, those are pretty good shortstops. So,
yeah, I've heard a few good stories about those guys. So
yeah, they're not bad. Also, let's not forget Felipe Lopez.
Rich Aurelia.
Oh, Rich Aurelia. Oh, man. What about Orlando Cabrera? Remember that guy?
I do. See, now we're getting to some good old names here, Chad.
D'Angelo. Oh, he was a second baseman, D'Angelo Jimenez.
That's all right. We can still talk about him.
Yeah, oh, the good old days, the early 2000s. Ugh. So anyway, let's say we fast forward here to July 1 of 2018. What's your Reds infield look like? I mean, first of all, you probably got who? Scott Hatteberg at first. Somebody took his spot.
Yeah. John something? John Voight. John Voight. I knew it.
You know, I know a guy that owns John Voight's car. John Voight the dentist.
You know that guy, huh?
I know that guy. These are the types of jokes that would make my daughter roll her eyes, by the way. But, you know, I can't get enough of them here on Red Leg Nation Radio.
I just hope everybody gets that joke.
Me too. If you get that joke, you need to send me an email at chaddotson@redlegnation.com, or you need to tweet at Red Leg Nation Radio, or at Red Leg Radio, or at DougDirt24, or at Dotson C. If you got that joke, you need to let one of us know that you got that joke, because I'm worried about our audience if nobody gets it.
Yeah, I think we probably skew towards an audience that would get that one.
I would think so. You would hope. So, I think if we said something like that on Twitter, most of our followers would get it. So, so John Voight at first. Who else you got? July 1, 2018.
I think that you're going to have Nick Senzel at second base. I really do. Slide on over to shortstop, I think it's going to be Peraza, and at third base, it's going to be Suarez, and then behind the plate, Tucker Barnhart for a majority of the time, although I as long as Mesoraco's healthy, I'm sure they'll mix him in, you know, two or three times a week. But I think that, you know, based on what all has been said in the new contract that he just got,
sure,
he's going to be the guy that they give the most playing time to.
And let's talk about Barnhart here in just a moment, but I think I agree with you on that infield. I just don't see the Reds retaining Zach Cozart. And I love Cozart. I think we're both fans of Zach Cozart. I know a lot of you are. And I was a fan of Zach Cozart, and I have it in print to prove it, even before he started hitting, just based on that amazing glove of his. But I just don't see how the – I mean, I'd consider it, but I just don't see how the Reds can make that qualifying offer to him, be on the hook for, you know, whatever, $18 million, whatever it is, $17
million. 17.4.
Yeah, so it's a lot of money, and there's – you know, he was a, what, almost 5-win player this year, but he's not going to be that next year. He could be good. I have no reason to doubt that he'll be a good shortstop, but 32 years old, ugh, it's tough. It's a tough call for a team that's in this spot where the Reds are in the rebuilding cycle.
I don't even think it's tough. I cannot make the argument that it makes sense for the Reds, given where they're expected to be in 2018, unless they're just, you know, fully going on, everything goes perfectly right with our plan. They're not gonna really compete for the playoffs. I mean, unless they've got a plan to make moves that we just can't see right now, that much money to a player in a season where you're not gonna really push for 85, 88 wins, it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't. You could better utilize that money both now and in the future.
Yeah, I mean,
where I'm sitting, that's nothing against Zach Cozart. I think that he would be worth that money next year for somebody, even if he does decline, which I expect him to. I do think that he's worth that money. It's just he's not worth that money to this team in this situation.
Yeah, he'll likely earn that contract if he were to, you know, get it and play for somewhere else. But, you know, I got two things there. Number one, as much as I've been trying to get the Reds to hire me as well, this is, you know, you get emotional about these guys you like, and you try not to let that skew your analysis, but it's just hard to let a guy go, and that's why I say it's a tough decision. It's probably not a tough decision if, like, you're trying to, you know, sort of look at it rationally and objectively, and to me, it's a tough because you know what the right decision is, and you like the guy, and you hate to see him go. But from a strictly baseball-related standpoint, it's not that tough. So, you know, I don't know. I hate to see Cozart go. Probably it's about that time. And I'm optimistic about Peraza at shortstop. Again, though, I'm getting myself in a situation where I was optimistic about Billy Hamilton this year based on his strong second half the year before. That didn't come to pass. So maybe it's fool's gold with Peraza, but he doesn't have to hit that well to be a quality shortstop. There aren't that many good hitting shortstops anyway. So.
No, there's not. But at the same time, even with his quality second half, I mean, he had a 640 OPS in the second half.
Is that good?
That is not good. That did come with a 333 on base percentage, but that means that he slugged 307. Ooh. So. It's nothing against Jose Peraza, but he has to hit for more power than that, even if he is going to get on base a little bit. I understand that he can steal some bases and provide base running value, but it's incredibly difficult to be any sort of viable offensive everyday player if you're going to slug 307.
Yeah, that's tough. Okay, I want to talk about Tucker Barnhart quickly, because
okay.
he did get the big contract. But first, I'm going to ask you a trivia question, and this is a question designed to see if you've been paying attention to my Twitter feed.
Uh-oh.
Doug, yeah, I know, right? Look at him quickly pulling it up to see if anybody can find it.
Hold on. I'm going to stop you right there. If anybody's looking right now, please get the cameras turned off. That's creepy. Okay, go.
That's a good point. Which Cincinnati Reds starting pitchers, who are the top two Cincinnati Reds starting pitchers by wins above replacement? In 2017.
For the Reds?
For the Reds. Which starting pitchers were top two in baseball reference wins above replacement?
Oh, see, that's what I was going to ask. Are we going baseball reference or fan graphs?
We're going baseball reference.
Okay.
Starting pitchers.
We're going to go with Luis Castillo. He's got to be on both. He's got to be on both lists.
He's number one. Yeah, I'm sure of it.
And
Luis Castillo in his rookie season, 2.5 wins above replacement in, you know, half a season.
I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't see it on your Twitter feed, but I'm going to go with Sal Romano.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have some excellent consolation prizes for you, Doug, but you're not the winner today.
Oh, see, if you'd have gone with Fangraphs, that would have been right.
Would it have been?
It would have been.
In baseball reference wins above replacement, Tyler Molly. Who made four starts?
I'm not a big fan of pitching war, no matter which version we're going with. But there's no convincing me that a guy who threw 20 innings was more valuable than what a guy like Sal Romano brought.
I agree.
It just doesn't make sense.
Romano had a good year.
And it's not even like, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. Tyler Romano had a nice ERA in 20 innings. But he had like 11 walks and 14 strikeouts. Like you cannot mix the numbers well enough for me to be like, yeah, that was the second most valuable starting pitcher. Like, it just doesn't work for me there. I'm sorry.
No, I agree. I agree 100%. And I love Tyler Molly as a player, but Sal Romano impressed me as much as Sal Romano, in terms of somebody who exceeded my expectations in 2017 more than anyone on the team. But his baseball reference wins above replacement, 0.2 wins above replacement.
That's a tough one for me.
That's a tough one. Tyler Molly was 0.6.
If you look at – I was actually looking at this earlier today, so I know this. He had an ERA plus of 99, which means that he was league average.
He's dead average as a rookie. 23-year-old rookie, right?
For what? For it's like 80 or 90 innings?
Yeah.
How was that? Like that's
valuable.
How was that 0.2 wins above replacement? Yeah, I just don't understand.
Yeah, that seems like a valuable player to me. That seems like Mike Leake you know, that we were very happy with for so many years, you know, league average starter. And the best thing is he did that in his first season. I expect him to get better. I'm on the Sal Romano bandwagon. And not only because he's named after a character in Mad Men, which is one of my favorite shows.
I'm pretty sure that he was named after his father.
And Mad Men also wasn't around when he was born. But still.
But also that part, but we'll just ignore that one.
the point I was trying to make really was, Tyler Molly was good, but the Reds' second best starting pitcher had 0.6 wins above replacement.
Yeah. And
also, the top two there, or top three if you include Romano in there. First of all, Castillo wasn't even a Red until halfway through the season. He was in Double A halfway through the season. You know, Molly wasn't even up until the very end of August. Sal Romano was up early, but then was hurt, and none of them pitched that much. And so that's a good illustration of how bad the rotation was and why I expect them to be significantly better next year. But it all depends on health, and I'm not willing to bet on the health of any Reds pitcher.
Yeah, no, we've discussed that before, and it's painful to look back at it. So, hopefully they're healthy next year. Because if they are, I'm with you. I think that's a big step forward without really acquiring anybody else.
Absolutely. And just to there were actually two Reds relievers who had more wins by replacement than Molly. So the second and third highest on the pitching staff. I'm sure you can imagine the second highest wins by replacement among Reds pitchers.
Iglesias?
Rosell Iglesias, 2.3 wins per replacement. And the next one, third best, the third most valuable pitcher by baseball. And again, yes, we can argue about how, you know, there are lots of complaints and lots of reasons to be suspect. But the third best Reds pitcher this year, or the third, you know, most valuable Reds pitcher this year by wins per replacement, Wandy Peralta, who had a fine season, I guess, but, you know, come on.
That's
ugly. Tucker Barnhart.
That is rough.
Tucker Barnhart. You like Tucker Barnhart?
I do. I'm a Tucker Barnhart fan. I'm a believer that defense is more important up the middle. That's, you know, second base, shortstop, center field, catcher than offense is.
Billy Hamilton.
And Tucker's one of the better defensive catchers in baseball. I mean, you know, the area that people talk about him not being as good as some other guys is, you know, pitch framing. But I think there's a lot more to that than the numbers are telling us anyways. And he's excellent in every other aspect defensively. So,
Billy Hamilton. Why aren't you talking about Billy Hamilton?
Because you said we're going to talk about Tucker Barnhart.
I know, but I just thought for some opportunity
there. Crazy, obsessive Billy Hamilton fan.
No, I agree with you about Tucker. And I said just a moment ago that Sal Romano did more to sort of raise himself in my estimation than anybody. But I think actually, you know, Tucker Barnhart is right there. I've always expected Tucker, who's been a longtime friend of Red Leg Nation Radio, so I'm biased. He's been on two or three times he's been on the podcast, and actually just a couple weeks ago agreed to come on again during this offseason. So we're going to be catching up with Tucker Barnhart. Good kid, local kid. But I kind of expected him to be a guy that had like a 14-year major league career all as a backup. You know, he did enough things well to stick around. That's kind of who I saw him be. And that may end up be where he ends up as a long-term backup. But this year, you know, roughly a league average hitter and defensively elite. I mean, pitch framing, he's not looked so good. But every other metric, Tucker Barnhart looks as good as anyone in the majors. And I did not see that big leap coming before this year. Maybe I should have. Because he was a minor league gold glover as a catcher.
Yeah, I think the big strides that he made were at the plate, and you know, I mean that might just be one catchers develop later because they focus so much on the defensive side of things in the early part of their career. And two, let's be honest, the baseball was juiced this year, so you know maybe that helped him out a little bit. And then the third thing, he just got more playing time this year. He was probably able to find a more consistent rhythm than he's been able to for quite a while. You know, we always like to think that guys can just come off the bench and be what they always were, but it's not that easy. You know, you generally need to see pitching consistently to be able to perform at a high enough level. And, you know, as a catcher, it's not always easy to do that, especially as a backup catcher where, you know, maybe you're only seeing, you know, 10, 12 plate appearances a week versus, you know, the other guy who's seeing 25 to 30. You know, having things switched like that, that may have been a big key for Tucker taking that step forward.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Doug. Billy Hamilton is the best player in baseball. But back to Tucker, Here's what I like about Tucker's season at age 26. Again, the defense, there's no complaints. I've got no complaints about his defense. But this is a guy that, as a catcher, age 26, 347 on base percentage, you know, and get on base a little bit. He's not going to hurt your offense. Give me a league average catcher with, or a league average hitter with great defense at catcher. I'll take it every day. And so it's sort of flipped for me. I think he could maybe for the next two or three years be the primary guy if we're talking like a 60-40, you know, playing time sharing situation. And then if after Mesoraco leaves at the end of this coming year, maybe more than that, as long as his health holds out, because it's going to be a while before the Reds have someone else to pair with him. I think it's going to be at least a couple years. You know, Tyler Stevenson's away. I'm not sure I'm sold that Chris Oakey can be that guy. And so so Barnhart's going to get his chance the next few years, and I thought it was a really good signing. I thought the Reds kind of made away like bandits on that contract extension with Tucker Barnhart. It seemed to me to be pretty team-friendly. I see why Tucker Barnhart would want to grab it, but I liked it. I liked it both ways.
Yeah, I'm with you on my initial reaction. I thought, well, that's a really good deal for the Reds. I'm not sure that Tucker's going to look back on that and think that, you know, he got the most money that he should have. But at the same time, money's not everything. Two, he's close to home, just started a new family. So, you know, that probably plays into it a little bit. You know, him, the wife, the new baby, they're close to the grandparents.
You know, get some security the next few years.
And it's not like $16 million is something right to sneeze at. Like, if you gave me $16 million right now, no one would ever hear or see from me again. Like, exactly. I'm with you. I think that was a much better deal for the Reds than necessarily for Tucker Barnhart. But again, he's going to do all right making that kind of money.
Not a bad deal for Tucker either. But if he wins the Gold Glove somehow, and I don't know that I expect him to win it, but he's certainly a very good candidate. I expect he'll be a finalist. If he does get that Gold Glove, it might start looking like an even more team-friendly contract. But really happy to have Tucker in the fold the next few years. No complaints whatsoever about Tucker Barnhart, except that his beard is a little bit better than mine.
Well, you know, you just need to work harder at it, Chad. That's all.
Well, maybe that's all I need to do is work harder at growing my beard.
I mean, no Shave November's right around the corner. If you just start now,
yeah.
You know, by the time Christmas rolls around, you should be good.
Oh, I'll look like a hockey, you know, defenseman.
Well, just, you know, keep your teeth and you'll be fine.
Yeah, I'll have that ahead of them. to flip back to that Dick Williams interview, is there anything else in particular that you think we should highlight about that interview that he had? I'm trying to think.
You know, the one thing that he addressed that was, you know, more interesting than some of the rest of the stuff is kind of how he felt on counting on guys like Homer Bailey, Anthony DeSclafani, and Brandon Finnegan.
Yeah.
You know, right now, it seems that all three of the guys are healthy. Homer Bailey finished the season. We can debate his numbers all we want, but, you know, he finished the season. I think that we all expect him to be healthy based on what we saw. Now, what we can expect out of him is a different story, but I think that right now it's safe to think that he should be ready to go in spring training next year health-wise. You know, Williams kind of said that, you know, they want, you know, things from, you know, DeSclafani and Finnegan, but it's hard to project them to have a full season just because it's the nature of the business. And that's actually a direct quote. I'm reading it off the page right now because I wanted to make sure I got that right. Now, this isn't him speaking. This is me speaking. But, you know, I think he's right. You know, neither one of those guys pitched last season much. I think, you know, Finnegan had, what, 4 starts in like 13 innings. Nothing after June. You know, but, you know, just came out that he claims that he's healthy. He's good to go right now.
Yes.
DeSclafani threw well in instructional league. You know, he got through all of the things that they wanted him to. So it would seem that, you know, he's quote unquote healthy, ready to go for next season. You know, I feel more comfortable thinking that Brandon Finnegan is going to pitch next year than I do DeSclafani, who, you know, DeSclafani had a legitimate actual tear in his elbow, whereas Finnegan had a muscle related problem in his shoulder. And that's, I think those are two very different kind of injuries when you're dealing with a pitcher. But you know, it just kind of brings us back to the situation with the pitching. You know, the Reds have all these options, but how many do they feel comfortable counting on? And I'm not sure that there's more than Luis Castillo at this point that they feel fully confident that this is our guy that we're going to go with next year.
Yeah,
I mean, if those three guys, you know, Homer, DeSclafani, Brandon Finnegan, if they're all healthy, they're locks for the rotation, I think. I think they've all done enough, and in Homer's case, he's making too much money to throw him in the bullpen, even if he does struggle a little bit in spring training, that, you know, they're the guys.
Well, I think right there's your difference between a Reds team that, you know, makes some progress next year, but is still, you know, not anywhere near the playoffs, and a team that could be, you know, somewhere close to competitive, is if Brandon Finnegan and Homer Bailey and Anthony DeSclafani are healthy all season long. It just really changes the look of the group you're choosing from for that starting rotation. And this is ignoring the idea that the Reds go out and get somebody, but if those three guys can be healthy and no one, certainly not me and certainly not the Reds, is going to bet the ranch on any of those guys being healthy, much less all three. But if somehow, if those three guys were all healthy, you got so many more options, and you really have to think the Reds can be at least a fun team to watch. I'm not willing to predict necessarily a wild card yet, but you're starting to get in the neighborhood where you can start talking about something like that. But again, I'm not going to take any bets on any of those three being healthy, and the idea that all three of them would be, that's we've not seen it yet. But man, especially like DeSclafani, this is a legit number two starter when he's healthy. I mean, this guy's legitimately talented.
Those three guys being healthy would be a difference maker for the Reds. Like you said, I'm not sure I'd be willing to say wild card, but I mean, that's a huge step forward versus, you know, the, what, 90-something starts they got from guys with ERAs over 5.5 that they replaced them last year. I mean, it's that's an enormous difference in the quality level. And, you know, it would also help the bullpen out as it would give them more options internally in that aspect of the game, because they could take, you know, guys that maybe they have to rely on as starters right now just because, you know, those guys may not be healthy, and slide some of them into the bullpen, you know, and it just gives everything on the pitching side more options, more stability, and, you know, that's really been the bigger issue for the Reds over the past couple of years, is just the amount of guys that were so bad pitching, both in the rotation and in the bullpen, because of all these injuries.
Well, those guys being healthy, you don't give starts to Tim, and I like Tim Adelman, but you don't give starts to Tim Adelman and Bronson Arroyo and Asher Wojciechowski and Luis Alberto Bonilla, who, again, I will say for the fifth or sixth time on the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast, has the he's not a Red anymore, but I love saying that name. Luis Alberto Bonilla. Say that for me one time, Doug.
That one for me time, Doug. Right, something like that.
You're not giving starts to those guys. And, you know, that's a big, you know, actually, Wojciechowski's ERA as a starter was, a, you know, 8-something. Luis Alberto Bonilla, 8.1. Bronson Arroyo, well, let's not talk about. You know, all those guys were really, really well below average. And that's a huge swing in what you can expect out of your team. Ugh.
Now, here's a fun little game for everybody to play.
Let's play a fun little game, Doug.
Go to baseballreference.com and type in Asher Wojciechowski. Good luck on spelling that. I might be the only one alive that isn't named Wojciechowski that can actually spell that without looking it up. But look at his game logs and then sort by team. He actually pitched really, really well against everybody in baseball except for the Cubs, who absolutely destroyed him.
Yeah.
His ERA was like, I'm pulling this one out of my memory. It was either 16-something or 19-something.
That's not good.
Versus everybody else, it was like 3.5.
Really?
Yeah, so just don't let him pitch against the Cubs, which, unfortunately, you play 20 times a year. And maybe Asher Wojciechowski can be a very good major league pitcher. But, yeah, they definitely beat his brains in last year. But he was very successful against everybody else.
Look at his splits as starter reliever, too. I think he's got a chance of being in the bullpen next year. His splits weren't bad.
It's funny. You know, you look at his peripherals. You know, he had 64 strikeouts in 62 innings with just 19 walks. I mean, those are good numbers.
Yeah.
But you know, then you look at his ERA and it was 6.5. Right. That's not a good number. And I think the big key there is that he gave up 14 home runs in his 62 innings, which is astronomically high.
Can't do that at Great American Ballpark.
No, and to be fair, that probably was part of the problem, but, you know, 14 home runs in 62 innings, a lot of those are probably going to go out in a lot of places.
Since you're at Baseball Reference, looking up Asher Wojciechowski, that's Wojciechowski, instead of looking at Wojciechowski, go look at Luis Castillo and just admire that brilliant stat line from his age 24 rookie season. Oh, I love Luis Castillo.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
Oh, man, it's gorgeous. He's almost as good a baseball player as Billy Hamilton. And that's my opinion. Yeah. He's almost
as
good.
He might even be a better pitcher. Might be.
Well, now you're just being silly, Doug.
If you've ever met me or talked to me before, you know that.
All right. Here's a question. We started new at RedLegNation.com, and you guys need to be going to RedLegNation.com every day. We're talking about the Reds. But we had a question and answer session and a new feature that we have at the site called Three Reds Questions. And one of the questions, and I'm going to go ahead and give you my answer, and then I'll let you answer it after that, Doug. The question was, which one of the Reds starting pitchers, age 25 or younger, do you expect to take the biggest step forward in 2018? Now, I think I know what your answer is going to be. I look forward to hearing it. We haven't talked about that before. But here's the question again. Which of the Reds starting pitchers, age 25 or younger, do you expect to take the biggest step forward in 2018? Now, my money on that one is the guy that we talked about a little bit earlier, is Tyler Molly. And I may be reaching a little bit there. He's the youngest of that sort of core group that we have of young pitchers, but he's adjusted very well. Every time he's bumped up a level in the system, he's going to endure more struggles than in those first four starts. Although he had some struggles, certainly throwing strikes in those four starts, and he had some good results. But he's gonna struggle sometimes, and I don't think he's ever going to be a top of the rotation starter. But I do think long term he can be even sort of like I would call him Mike Leake plus. You know, and that's not nothing. That's not bad. So, you know, I don't think that Molly's going to be in the Reds rotation in April. I really don't think he'll make the team out of spring training. He could, but I don't think he will. I do think he'll be in the major leagues for good by the end of the season, and I feel like he's going to take a really big step forward in terms of being in the Reds' plans. So now I'm going to pose the question to you, Doug Gray. Which of the Reds starting pitchers, age 25 or younger, do you expect to take the biggest step forward in 2018?
Not that I disagree with your assessment of Tyler Molly. I agree with you on a lot of the things you said. But I'm going to go with Sal Romano, and here's why. First off,
that's
we
not
mentioned
who I
earlier,
expected you to say, by the way. We'll talk about the other guy next.
Okay. First off, we mentioned earlier, he was a league average pitcher for his 87 innings this year. You know, nothing wrong with that. You know, he's the second youngest guy among this group that I think that we all kind of look forward to being a potential, you know, real starting pitcher for the organization. He's 23 years old right now. He just turned 24. So he'll be 24 all of next year. You know, he had solid numbers this year, depending, no matter really what you look at. You know, didn't give up a bunch of home runs. You know, walk rate could have been a little bit better, but it wasn't bad. You know, strikeout rate could have been a little bit better, but it wasn't bad. I really liked what I saw from him when he started trusting his changeup over the last month and a half of the season. I think that, you know, if you look back at the numbers, you know, he performed much better when he really started throwing his changeup more. You know, the first 2 months in the big leagues, you know, you barely saw it. You'd see three or four a game. When he started throwing 15 of them a game, you really started seeing hitters not being able to sit on things for him. And I think that that's going to be a real difference maker next year for him. You know, you look back at his minor league record, he usually throws a lot of strikes. I think that, you know, his walk rate was higher this year in the major leagues than, you know, I would expect it to be moving forward, because for a lot of the time he was only throwing two pitches, so guys could battle against him, and eventually he'd walk some guys that he wouldn't normally walk. I just think that confidence that he showed later on in the season with the changeup gives him three legitimate options to show major leaguers, and that's really going to make a difference for him next year. I expect the walk rate to go down a little bit and the strikeout rate to go up a little bit. And if you do both of those and you're already a league average pitcher, you're probably going to be a bit better than that. And so that's the guy I'm going to go with.
I can't argue with that one. Sal Romano is a guy that what I liked. I I've said this on the podcast before, but I was in the stadium for his first start, and he was throwing hard, and he was overthrowing, and his family was there, and he was excited and pumped up. But what you saw after that start, and it was a while before his next start, but you sort of saw the wheels turning in his head. You could see him sort of develop start to start as a major league pitcher and learning, and it's exactly what you want out of a young pitcher. He was getting better. He improved consistently throughout the season. And this is not a sabermetric argument, just, I love the fact that this is a guy that was learning. We sort of talk about kids, these young pitchers getting it, some get it sooner rather than later. And he started to get it really quickly and made me think that his ceiling might be a little higher than I expected it would be. So I like the idea of Sal Romano. I can see that happening. And so you say that I'm absolutely wrong about Tyler Mahle.
I did not quite
say that's
that,
what you said.
Well, we can rewind this and find out exactly what I said. That's the wonder of these podcasts is, you know, they're not live.
Recorded,
we can record them and play them back.
What do you think about Mahle, though?
Oh, I think that, you know, a lot of what you said is true. The reason I wouldn't pick him, and this may just be me, you know, thinking too much about the question.
Stuff.
Is, you know, not even that so much. It's, you know, he dominated in the minor leagues. So, you know, while I don't expect him to be that good in the major leagues, I don't think that it'd be a huge step forward for him to be above average next year. I think that, you know, that's a reasonable expectation based on all that he's done in his career. That's not really a big step forward for me when I think about it like that. Now, if we're going to look at it, you know, as, you know, he only threw 20 innings in the major leagues, and to be fair, the jump from AAA to the major leagues is huge.
It's big.
Like it's enormous. So anybody making that step, I mean, that's a really big step for them. But when the question was posed, I didn't really think him right off the bat because of what he's already done in the past.
I see it. But still, the guy you picked is not who I told you. I thought I knew for sure who you would pick. Can you guess who I thought you would pick?
Robert Stevenson.
That's who I expected. You've been the biggest Robert Stevenson booster, and you're starting to be proven correct over the last few years. And I think he's a name that could be, none of us would be surprised if at the end of 2018 he was the pitcher that took the starting biggest step forward.
Yeah, no, I think that we saw signs of that this year. I'll be honest, the reason I didn't pick him, and don't get me wrong, I still think that he's got some of the best stuff that the Reds have seen in quite a while. He's not quite there with Luis Castillo, but
he's close.
He's close.
I do think he is.
Know,
yeah.
If you look at Robert Stevenson's pure stuff. The fastball, it's there. You know, he's got velocity. He can make it move sometimes. That splitter. I mean, that's a plus pitch. You know, the slider, plus pitch. His curveball. I mean, it's at least average, and sometimes it's better than that. I mean, he's got four legitimate average to better major league pitches.
Got to throw strikes.
But that's the thing. I do think that eventually Robert Stevenson is going to figure out the strike zone. I really do. I've seen enough evidence that, you know, he can go stretches where he's got it. It's a mechanical thing that he's got to figure out the consistency with, but I've seen enough of it to think that one day he's going to figure it out.
And the sky's the limit if he does.
It is. I'm just not sure that I'm comfortable saying that next year is going to be that time.
Right.
And, you know, I just feel more comfortable picking Sal Romano based on other things.
Sure.
Well,
let me see what excites me.
Okay.
And I'm overly optimistic generally anyway when it comes to the Reds, against all evidence. But we did this, I told you about this three Reds questions feature we did at Red League Nation, and we had actually six of our Red League Nation writers answer all these questions. And in this question of which Reds starting pitcher would take the biggest step forward, we all, six different writers at Red League Nation answered the question independently of each other. We didn't talk to each other. Nobody consulted on who you're going to pick or who you're going to write about. It was just supposed to be who you really think. And we picked six different pitchers. it's crazy. Nick Carrington picked Amir Garrett. Ashley Davis picked Robert Stevenson. Chad Dotson was correct. He picked Tyler Mahle. Nick Kirby picked, what did I say here? Actually, it looks like Nick Kirby. No, Nick Kirby picked, he picked Robert Stevenson as well.
Okay.
So two of them picked Robert. So there were five different ones picked among the six picks. Steve Mancuso picked Luis Castillo.
And if he took a big step forward, oh my gosh.
And that's what he expects him to be, a top-tier starter, close to an ace, he says. Can you imagine?
Steve, I hope you're right. And I'm not even going to disagree with him. I think Castillo can be close to an ace, too.
Yeah.
But, it's fun to think about if he takes another step forward.
Well, he's up there with the Corey Klubers and the Chris Sales at that point. I mean, if he takes a big step forward.
Yeah, he really is. and that's what's so crazy about it is, I mean, I think we all can see him doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not off the off the charts. Matt Habel picked Sal Romano. So the writers at Red Leg Nation, if we include you in that, we got a couple for Sal Romano. We got two for Robert Stevenson. We got Amir Garrett. We've got Tyler Malley. We've got Luis Castillo. That's fun. It's fun that there's this big group of players that you can sort of, you don't have to squint too hard and see them taking a big step forward. They're not all going to. If they did, the Reds are in great shape. But to me, as a fan, and we've been watching this rebuild, that's a really exciting thing that we have this huge group of young pitchers, 25 or younger, that could be the guy, could take that step forward. I know we want wins. I know we want back in the playoffs. I hope the Reds get there eventually. But until we're there, that's as exciting, sort of a little something to be excited about as anything else I've seen.
Yeah, I'm with you. Again, like you said, the wins would be nice, and I do think they're coming. But you know, if you watched the Reds, and especially in the second half, and I know that September was rough from a one loss standpoint, but you could see what the Reds are hoping for. Like it was there. A lot of the guys that you know you've been talking about waiting for 2-3 years, they're showing up now. And it's really not hard to imagine a year or two down the road where all of these guys we've been waiting on, they're the anchors for that next team. Yeah. That's a really competitive Reds team.
Yeah, it's exciting. Anything else about the Reds you want to talk about this week, Doug Gray?
I think we covered quite a bit on this one.
We did.
And, you know, with a team that's not playing, I think we had a lot of little storylines there.
Maybe it's like this with every team, but I always find like there's no shortage of things for us to talk about when we do these podcasts because, I don't know, it's an interesting team. I wish they would add some wins to the equation to be even more interesting. All right, something that Doug and I have been doing recently, I think we forgot the last time we did a podcast, but in other recent podcasts that Doug and I have done here on Red Leg Nation Radio, we've been picking a movie. Because I guess the Reds don't have as many wins, we've got a couple minutes here we can waste on movies. Talking a little bit about movies, Doug and I are both big movie lovers, and let's hear your you got a recommendation or a review or a movie you want to highlight for our listeners, Doug?
I do. I watched a movie called Turbo Kid, and it's available on Netflix if you have that. You can also watch it on Amazon Video, but you do have to rent it at that point. But I figure most people have Netflix these days. Now, here's the tagline for the movie. I'm going to set it up for you here. In a post-apocalyptic wasteland in 1997, a comic book fan adopts the persona of his favorite hero to save his enthusiastic friend and fight a Tyrannosaurus Rex overlord. It's not really Tyrannosaurus Rex. I just butchered that word so badly I went with that.
It's impressive.
I want to say it's kind of like a B-rate kind of movie, but the production value isn't B-rate. It's well put together. It's just a fun throwback kind of movie. I really enjoyed it. If you grew up watching, you know, bad movies from the 80s, there's a lot of references in there to those. It was just a fun watch. It's not going to be confused with some great masterpiece, but you know, for an hour and a half, it was very fun. It took me back to some things I saw in my childhood. I really enjoyed it.
I like it. I'm going to add it to my list. Sounds very, very interesting. I have not seen that yet. My movie this week is Badlands. Badlands is one that, I've got some blind spots. I like to think I'm a semi-cinephile, but I've got some blind spots. So I've been trying to go back and fill those in. And Badlands, 1973, was the first feature film directed by Terrence Malick. And Terrence Malick is sort of a controversial filmmaker. He's considered to be one of the greats, but The Tree of Life was nominated for Best Picture, and that's good, although that's a movie that I went to, and 11 people stood up and walked out because it was so difficult to understand, I guess, but I enjoyed it. I'm not sure that I understood it, but I enjoyed it. He did The Thin Red Line, if you've seen that. Days of Heaven with Richard Gere was a good one that he directed. But Badlands was his feature film debut, and it stars Sissy Spacek, I think her first film role, and Martin Sheen. Now, Martin Sheen, oh my goodness. It's basically about this 25-year-old Martin Sheen and then a 15-year-old supposedly Sissy Spacek and they go on a killing spree, and it's based on a story from a killing spree that happened in the 1950s. And that's when it's set, in the 1950s. And Martin Sheen, I mean, he's a good actor. We've already known that. But if this is not one of the five best single performances I've ever seen from anyone, he's unbelievable in this movie. And, I mean, Sissy Spacek's good, but Martin Sheen, that and his performance in Apocalypse Now, a letter in the 70s, those are two of the greatest performances ever. It's not a real long movie, hour and a half, I think, but it's just tense the whole way, and he's the most engaging character. He's just like he's a killer, but he's just like, somehow you like him. And I think it's one of the best directorial debuts that I've seen for Malick. And I think it's Malick's best film that I've seen of his films. Just sort of a romantic adventure. A romantic tragedy, I think, is the way it's been called. I saw in a review. So Badlands, 1973. I'm not sure. I think you have to. It'd have to be rented on Amazon to get it. I don't think it's available on Netflix, but worth a watch. So a couple of good movies there. Recommendations for you. I'm looking forward to looking at yours. I've already put it on my list, Doug.
Well, I hope you enjoy it and that I didn't talk it up too much. But yeah, I had a fun time watching it.
Yeah,
so.
Sounds fun. There's another one on Netflix that I haven't watched yet, so I'm not recommending it, but I'm really interested to see. It just was released on Netflix, and it's called the Meyerowitz Stories New and Selected. And the reason I want to mention it here is I'm dying to watch it. You need to go put it on your list. Noah Baumbach is the director of it. He co-wrote one of my favorite movies, The Life Aquatic, with Steve Zissou, but he's also directed several really fun movies. Francis Ha is his best movie that I've seen, but the reason I mention it is, Doug, you're not going to believe this. I've seen two separate pieces that were sort of creating some buzz for one of the actors in that movie for a possible Oscar nomination. And the actor I'm talking about is Adam Sandler.
Of course it was. Haven't you seen Punch Drunk Love? He's a fantastic actor.
He's great in Punch Drunk Love, and I don't know if you've seen...
He really is. He is great in that movie.
Yes, and there's this movie called, in which Sandler starred with Don Cheadle. Rain Over Me is the name of it, and if anybody's
I will never watch that movie again. But if I recommend you watch it once,
yes.
But I will never watch it again.
But isn't Sandler good in it?
He's so good.
He's legitimately a good actor, and you forget that he is because he's in all these crappy movies. Although he's in some crappy movies that I love.
Whoa!
Have you seen?
I need you to pull those jets real quick on that.
Listen, I watched The Do Over with him and David Spade, and I love both those guys, but that was impossible to watch. But you're right. Punch Drunk Love, Paul Thomas Anderson movie, and Rain Over Me. Sandler has chops. He doesn't have to be in these movies that are critically panned. And evidently he's getting some buzz in this one. I would love to see Sandler get an Oscar nomination just to see him at that ceremony next to, you know, Meryl Streep. It'd be great.
Now, here's the question. Because Sandler, he always shows up when he does these appearances wearing sweatpants and a t-shirt. Would he actually up to the Oscars in sweatpants and a t-shirt? I want to know.
And listen, I love movies, but you're not going to get me to say too much bad about Adam Sandler, so I hope so. And what's your favorite Adam Sandler movie? Let's end with that one.
Happy Gilmore, no question.
Ooh, there is a question. That's up there for me. Billy Madison's still number one for me, though. My gosh.
I think it's got to be Happy Gilmore for me. I think that just because that was the first one that I saw.
Yes.
And it, you know, as a, you know, 12, 13-year-old, it just changed how I looked at laughing. So
the price is wrong, Doug.
That's right.
All right. You got anything else for us today, Doug?
No, I do not. Thanks for listening. That's what I got.
There you go. It's been a fun one, you know, episode number 187, which is a crazy number. It keeps getting higher every week, I notice. Episode number 187 of the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast. As I say every week, if you can go and subscribe to us at iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast, we're there. You can subscribe to us, and wherever any of those services permit you to give a rating or a review, it does help people find us. And, you know, if you want to leave a review, if you got something good to say about us, do it. Say it. If you don't have anything good to say, keep your mouth shut. You can follow us at Red Leg Nation on Twitter and at RedLegNation.com every day. RedsMinorLeagues.com is where Doug makes his home, but he also writes for us at Red Leg Nation. But I encourage you to go to both of them, the two best sites for my money, that talk about the Reds on the internet. You can follow Doug at DougDirt24 on Twitter. I'm at DotsonC. I'd encourage you not to follow me on Twitter because I'm just, you know, the next few months I'm going to be talking about Virginia basketball and Georgetown basketball, and nobody wants to hear that. Also, I got to say, you know, follow us and write to us and email me at chaddotson@redlegnation.com and tell us what you think of the podcast. I'm really interested to know what you guys are thinking and if there are things you'd like to see us do. People, just give us some feedback. Really happy to hear some feedback. And again, I thank all of you. I know you got many, many things you can do with your free time. And the fact that so many of you, and the number's growing every week, I'm just so appreciative just that you take some time out of your day to download this and listen to us just talk about nonsense for an hour. We love it. So, Doug, appreciate you coming on again, buddy. It's always fun to talk.
Glad to be on, and I cannot wait for the next one.
Yeah, we're going to have to do it soon. So, for Doug Gray, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.